Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast, brought to you by the Flat Earth Society. If the eclipse was real, why wouldn't they let us look at it with our own eyes? Episode 294, Rest in Peace App Center and Other News.
Hey Mazen, do you follow Formula One at all?
So growing up, I used to watch Formula One religiously with my dad. He was a big Formula One fan, a Ferrari and Mercedes fan. When I moved to the US, I stopped watching it. But during the pandemic, someone in our bubble was like into the Netflix show, Drive to Survive. So she got me back into it. Ever since, I've been watching. But I don't know how to say this because I know you're going to take offense to it. I don't like Verstappen.
Well, of course not. Because he wins everything and it makes it not fun.
Yeah.
If you watched the race on Sunday, mm-hmm. he DNF'd for the first time in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Hopefully nobody is still catching up on the Australian GP by the time this comes out. But it was a good race. I have been super into it recently, but I'm the kind of fan that F1 fans hate because I came from Drive to Survive pretty late in the game. So I don't have all the history. I've been trying to educate myself, though, on like the history, but it's been fun.
I go back and forth. I don't know if I'm more of a Ferrari fan, but I also like Mercedes, but I also like the underdog story of Williams.
Williams is having a rough time.
They were good when I wasn't even alive when they were good, I feel like. So they're the underdogs in my mind.
I've had a really good time. I'm not going to say who my favorite driver and team are because I just don't want to make any enemies in our fan base. I feel like people get really intense about their favorite drivers and teams. Mm-hmm. But it's been really fun to watch. And this past weekend was insane to lose Max so early in the race and actually have it be a fight.
Yeah, I think Drive to Survive put them in the spotlight a lot that people didn't know that they're just grown-up children at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, you know so much more about the drivers and their personalities now because of Drive to Survive and social media and stuff too. And it's just, they're all seem like really cool people that I want to hang out with.
I would love to see if they did, it would have been great if they did like a Drive to Survive when Schumacher was driving.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder what those personalities
That would have been like. Really interesting. I feel like they were a lot more contentious with each other, like the drivers. Mm-hmm. Now they're all buddies. Mm-hmm. Like, Carlos and Lando gave each other a big hug after the race on Sunday. It was, they're just really cute and friends. Anyway, I could talk about F1 for the whole episode, but I won't. I'm Robin. I'm your host for today because Jamin is on his way to Africa, which is very exciting for him and his family. So I'll be your host for today. I'm your friendly director of engineering at InfiniRed, and I'm joined by my investigative co-host, Mazen, for the day.
Where's my magnifying glass? I need it. I'll get it next time.
Get your Sherlock Holmes hat.
Yeah.
I love it. Before we get into our topic, let's hear from our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored, as always, by InfiniRed. InfiniRed is a premier React Native consultancy located fully remote in the US and Canada. If you're looking for React Native expertise for your next project, hit us up at infinite.red/react-native, and don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Native Radio podcast.
I guess you did get to hear from Jamin. From Africa, doing the sponsorship. Not really. Let's get into our topic. We're going to do an episode of We React to News. Everything that's been going on in the React Native world. One of the biggest headlines recently is App Center. Microsoft App Center is being retired. Mazen, have you used App Center?
I used it and I was like, you know what? I'll just go through the pain of store uploads. This was but this was like early React Native, early App Center coming out. So
it was like the thing. It was the tool to use for a while there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't jump on that bandwagon. I don't know why I didn't.
We used it for Code Push for sure. We didn't, I don't remember that we ever used its full tool chain. Like, we didn't do builds on it.
Because they're like technically, well, not in like Firebase, but not all of the support Firebase has, right? It does like building, testing, distribution.
Yes.
Don't they do like analytics also and stuff like that?
They do analytics and diagnostics, like crash reporting and stuff. I think they're most known for CodePush, which was the first over-the-air updates.
When you say App Center, my mind just goes straight to CodePush. I don't really think about the other stuff.
That was really the feature they offered that was novel and you couldn't get anywhere else and you couldn't do yourself. Like building and distribution, like you can do that yourself. You can go through the stores, whatever. But CodePush was really their bread and butter. And they did say in the announcement of the retirement that you will still be able to use CodePush as a standalone. So they're creating a special version of CodePush that you can put in your app independently of the App Center SDK. So that's good because I think a lot of people still do use CodePush, but I don't think a ton of people were using the rest of their services. That said, I have a client that is still using their distribution services. And when I told them, I was like, oh, by the way, like we're going to have to figure out a new solution for App Center. They're like, oh, good, because we hate App Center. There you go. Well,
there you go.
That was an easier conversation than I thought it was going to be.
I've heard a lot of those stories. Like, it's great in theory for what it does, but it's not like intuitive and it's not easy to use. And I feel like the past couple of months, I've only heard negative things about it before they shut it down.
I think really just Microsoft is focusing on other things. Like, it just never got the dedicated attention that, like, say that like EAS is getting, which, by the way, is probably your best alternative right off the bat is like Expo, EAS.
Oh, hands down.
Because EAS has build all the way through store distribution.
And now they have store listing edit. Like you can edit your keywords, your description right in line. I know I've mentioned this in the podcast. What are we in March now? When we're recording, like a year ago, I feel like I touched on this because with the Chain React app, I was building it and I used EAS update and distribution and that whole pipeline for it. And it was an amazing developer experience a year ago. I used it recently and I feel like it's grown even more. It has a lot of potential. So I think for a company that's looking for an alternative, this is a very, very good solution. And I think recently, as part of this whole push, as this whole code push goes away, they've also released, what do you call it? GitHub Actions. So ways to kind of integrate all that into your CLI and all that. So that's amazing. So, and if you're interested, you could check out our Chain React 2023 app repo. It's pull request 183, which I think is in the show notes.
Yeah, we've used EAS pretty heavily around here. I don't think we've ever talked about Expo on the show, right, Mazen?
It's the first time I'm hearing it, actually.
That was
sarcastic. Like they came out yesterday or something.
We love Expo around here. We talk about it a lot. The only thing that they don't have is the crash reporting and analytics side. And they have, I think, pretty tight integration with Sentry is a good option if you're using Expo for your crashes and analytics. Along with, there's a ton of great analytics providers out there as well.
I wouldn't put it past them if there's an Expo Analytics SDK coming out soon.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was on the roadmap.
Watch out, Firebase.
Keep an eye out from the Infinite Red Space. We're planning a blog post about how to transition from App Center to EAS. So keep an eye out for that. Next up, we've got React Native Skia 1.0. Skia is official. It's no longer experimental. They're actually ahead of React Native and getting to 1.0. That's impressive.
You know what's funny about that? Until I watched this video, so the video I'm referring to is in the show, it will be in the show notes. It's called Time to Fly by William Candelon. I didn't realize Skia was experimental until now. Like, I just thought, like, any React Native versioning system, that it's out, it's...
I mean, it's probably experimental the same way React Native is, like,
fine.
Quote unquote experimental because it's still 0.0. seven exactly. Something.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I think kind of like going over what this video, Time to Fly, is about, William covers 5 points that, you know, Skia 1.0 does. One, rich text layout using their new Paragraph API. It's exactly what it sounds
like. Paragraph API, is that like...
They're like, calling it a Paragraph API. It's almost like a... Think of it as like a text wrapper. It's probably the best way to put it. So yeah, it's a... Think of it, you know how you use your text component? You would use a paragraph component. And what you can do is you can... You pass in a prop called paragraph. And then within that paragraph, you do like your styling, you know, size, font family, if you want to align it to the center or not. And then you do other stuff, like you add text to it, you add animations to it, you do whatever you want. And then the nice thing about it is you can add text as many times as you want. So let's hear me out. You add text and it says hello, and then you add another text that says world, but then you style world differently. Uh-huh. So it's almost like, you know, some websites you go to, that's their whole like banner mm-hmm. text. Some are underlined, some are bolded, just, like, and stuff. You can now essentially do that with this. And it is. What is it? Nesting text in React Native always has something wrong with it. You almost have to apply too much padding to all of them to get them to like line up and stuff. So that's a cool part to this. Another, you know, that's one. Number two, they've kind of upgraded their animation hooks. This is actually very cool. In the video, they got to show how you would write an animation in the past and then now you'd write it now. It's so much quicker, so much cleaner. They've essentially, in my mind, taken user feedback on how complex it was and how long it took to write an animation and just kind of simplified it. And it's like, you could do it in one line, two lines, and just get pure, clean, performant animations out of it. The other one is called Atlas API. So it's pretty cool because you can do like massive, large animations without skipping a beat, even on low-end Android devices. And I believe in the video, I'm kind of doing this from memory. In the video, they go over an actual like globe.
I can see why they that's why they call it the Atlas API.
Yeah, right. It's like a ball of do you call it? Like icons. And then that icon kind of moves around. And they compare before and after. And you do see like a jitter in the past, and then now it's just very smooth, kind of moving all over the screen. So that's pretty cool. I don't know if that's where Atlas came from, but it's pretty cool.
I mean, Atlas is the god that used to carry the world on his shoulders.
There you go. Well, that's actually right. Yeah. The number four on the list was Lottie Animations using a new package called React Native Scotty.
That's a really cool name for Skia. It is. Skia and Lottie.
And Lottie.
Please tell me there's like a logo or something referencing like a Scotty dog. Such a missed opportunity.
It's none of that. So this was built by Margello. So our good friend Mark Rusavi, who's been on the podcast.
Okay, Mark, if you're listening, you need to make the logo for React Native Scotty a Scotty dog. Please. This is important.
On this one, I'm not going to, you know, dig deep into it. It's basically, instead of you importing React Native Lottie, you'd import React Native Scotty. Still put your JSON animations in the Scotty component, and it's efficient. So a good benchmark they have, you can kind of see on the repo, they saw a 63% improvement in frame rates. That's massive, huge. If you think about it. So a lot of fun animations can happen faster and better with React Native. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I think we say this a lot on the podcast, but any package written by Mark Rusavi is a good package that I'm going on a limb here, but I'm sure is new architecture compatible also. I see a C++ folder. I'm not going to keep digging. 100% has to be new architecture. Last one, very quick. This is Canvas Kit JS. So really the best way to kind of explain this one that I was able to figure out, think of it as you deliver web experiences with React Native Skia in a small bundle size. So I think the small bundle size is very important. So you get to keep your performance low and, you know, everything that comes with a small bundle. At the same time, you're able to deliver what you would call web animations on mobile and then in reverse also on the web. So the whole cross-platform ability kind of lives there.
So there was a barrier to using Skia for web apps because it was just so large, which negatively impacts web since it has to load the entire bundle on refresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, Canvas Kit JS is just a polyfill for the Canvas Kit that uses like browser APIs. Does that make sense? So that's essentially all it does, you know, keeping everything down.
It's, like I mean, said, so. Having stuff that allows you to like seamlessly share stuff between your web and mobile is a huge theme that I've seen in a lot of libraries because it's getting to be super common to write once and run three places. I know we're doing it on a couple clients, so that's really good to see. Speaking of new architecture, React Native team published a new landing page on the doc site for the new architecture, which is a really good summary of the key points of the new architecture and why it's going to be important to switch. So that came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Theo, the YouTuber, released a video this week basically going through that document. You could say like, oh, he's just reading the docs, like it's low-hanging fruit. It's true. He did just go through and read that document, but he added some commentary that I found to be really helpful in kind of internalizing what the docs actually said. He gave some examples that were really helpful for me personally to kind of internalize it. And we as a consultancy are going to be responsible for convincing our clients, for one thing, when it's time to switch. So having these kinds of talking points in our arsenal is going to be really important. So I thought it was interesting. Like, Theo's a prolific YouTuber and can be a little bit controversial sometimes, but I thought it was a good video. Did you watch it, Mazen?
Yes, I did. Very helpful, like you said. Just the commentary and hearing from a React Native developer, what their perspective is. I think him doing the, or showing at least the tooltip demo that the team at Meta put together, that was great. I know internally JP
played around with it. JP is one of our...
And he kind of gave us his...
colleagues here at Infinite Red.
Yeah, colleagues here. He showed, you know, he explained that this is still on a nightly build, so you don't have full access to it with a latest release. But just getting to see the tooltip move without a jitter.
It was pretty mind-blowing. That's
big.
I went down a similar path of trying to recreate the example that they have in the docs, and it did not go well. Apparently, the code that was used is, not on main. But it was still super helpful. I also, like, Theo gave this example of talking about, like, JSI and going bridgeless and the fact that, like, you can run C++ basically directly. He gave this example of why you might want to do that. He gave his example was about the Twitch chat and the colors and the fact that they needed to make them accessible, and they had to do a bunch of math about transforming colors consistently across platforms, and it was C++ was like the only language that you could do it. And so being able to do something like that and like still have it run in React Native is going to be a huge deal, because you can't do something like that now with the old architecture. So that was a really helpful example. Yeah, so I would watch that if you haven't. I mean, if you want to just read the landing page, that's fine too. But if you want a little bit of extra commentary, I'd recommend the video. I think Evan Bacon also endorsed it and retweeted it on Twitter. So that's a pretty good indication that it's a good one. So
totally. And I think one bit of feedback I'll give anyone that's listening is, we are getting close to when, you know, Meta is recommending the new architecture. So I think if you are on a higher level of React Native or closer to, what's the latest release? 73?
Yeah.
Well, 74 soon, I believe. But if you are close to that, I would highly recommend turning on the new architecture in your repo and just seeing what happens. And if you get any gains from, you know, do some performance testing and all that kind of stuff. Start doing that sooner rather than later, so that, because essentially you could have an app that's performant and good, but then you turn on the new architecture and all of a sudden you see some drastic improvements that could unlock a lot of avenues for you. And also what it could do is unlock the potential for you to find packages out there that aren't new architecture compatible, and you can help Meta, who's actually helping all these open source maintainers, get their apps.
Expo's really taking a personal investment in making sure the libraries that people are using are new architecture compatible.
Mm-hmm. Where they're just helping the maintainers. You know, your app, at the end of the day, get better, but you're also helping the community and everyone else involved in the community have good, well-performant, new architecture compatible packages. Next up on our list, there's a new package out there by Gary Tuchman. It's called Faster Image. This is basically a replacement for React Native Fast Image, which was deprecated recently-ish, maybe a year or so ago. I do think there's a new package also coming out soon called React Native Fastest Image. That's a joke.
Faster. It only makes sense that there'll be a faster. Fastest. I
mean, React Native Fast. Right, yeah. React Native Fast Image. And then this one, Fastest Image. Faster Image. And then Fastest.
If you say Fastest, then you're just opening image. Yourself up to look stupid when someone comes out with something faster.
Yeah. So this is not Fastest. This is Faster Image View. Very good looking package. It's, you know, TypeScript compatible. We have animated transitions in here. We have placeholder support, memory and disk caching, which is very good. And, you know, looking at the repo, there's a nice GIF that kind of shows you how performant it is and how well it functions. And it supports VisionOS, if that's your thing.
Does he go into technically why, how it's able to be faster than React Native Fast Image?
Yeah, so he said, what he pretty much says on here is it focuses on speed and memory usage. So my guess is there's a lot of memory optimization and cleanup that's happening in the background. And he's using some other packages, which I've never heard of. Nuke for iOS and macOS, and then Coil for Android. Nuke is, you're just kind of reading their GitHub repo, load images from different sources and display them in your app using a simple, flexible API. Take advantage of powerful image processing capabilities and a robust caching system. So again, I guess it performance is the caching. Nuke is optimized for performance and is advanced. Its advanced architecture enables virtually unlimited possibilities for customization. So there's that. And then Coil pretty much has the same thing. You know, it's fast, lightweight, easy to use, modern using Kotlin, and essentially does disk caching and memory cleanup included, is what it says. So under the hood, he leverages native libraries that do all the optimization for you and then just kind of cleans up and unifies the API for us.
That'll be nice to try. I'm still using the React Native regular image in some of my projects.
Well, if you think about if you have a massive app, like we've talked about it on here before, the Mercari app, it's a lot of images because, you know, it's an e-commerce store and you're displaying a lot of images in a scroll view, horizontal and vertically.
It's just like a performance nightmare.
Exactly, on its own. So leveraging something like this could be helpful in scenarios like that. You have e-commerce apps, you have, you know, apps that have a long list, say, a good example could be like a contacts list app sort of thing where you have an icon and some text. That's a perfect example of where you would want to use something along those lines.
We're getting short on time, so we're going to move on to the next one, but it's related. Speaking of performance, Shopify, another e-commerce adjacent app, released an article recently on how they improved their app performance, authored by Talha Naqvi, who we actually had on the show in React Native or React Native Radio 245, which we'll link in the show notes. But they released a really in-depth article. Mazen, what was the kind of TLDR on that one?
So TLDR, load time optimization was done. I'm not going to go into the specifics. I think the article goes deeper than this. List optimization. So again, episode 245 with Talha was about flash list. So you can kind of see recycle view being used there. Setting inline requires to true. This is an interesting one. I think we've talked about it before. when that happens, you know, let's say you have a package that's imported at the top of your library, your component, but it doesn't get used in all scenarios, except certain scenarios. So you could wrap that in an inline require so that it's only used when that happens. So, you know, you don't have this bloated component with all these imports sort of thing, bogging it down. So it's a performance improvement there.
Weren't we just talking in our last episode about how inline requires is dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous, yes. But I think we also mentioned, or if we didn't, you know, we're mentioning it now, it's 75, I think, version 75 talks about how inline requires can help. So I think leveraging all those is kind of where, you know, finding the right balance and, you know, kind of knowing what you're doing. I don't know how I'd handle that in an app, but it'd be nice to kind of test out.
What I really loved about this, like about this article, or like the piece that resonated with me, was they kind of generalized the source of most of their performance bottlenecks was like one of three things. And the three things were doing necessary work at the wrong time and doing unnecessary work, or not leveraging cache to its fullest, like loading data every single render when you could be caching it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. I thought that was a really, really helpful generalization. And then they go into a lot of specifics in the rest of the article.
The two other things I kind of wanted to mention was they take advantage of batch state updates, which is also very good. You know, React 18, great feature there. And then native modules were taking too long to initialize. So they kind of talk about their strategy on how to handle that. So, you know, we are talking about building an app in JavaScript, TypeScript, but we do need our native counterparts to, you know, play nice. So they're finding that right balance right there, right? So long story short of this article, they improved app launch by 44%. Wow. That's huge.
That is huge.
And they also reduced, this is crazy to me, reduced screen load times by 59%. That's huge. For a long list to be reduced by 60%, that's noticeable, big time. So I would advise people looking at this article, to look at this article if they want, you know, if they feel like their app could use some performance help.
It's so often overlooked and sort of like saved till the end. So yeah, great article.
Totally.
If you want to learn more about how to make your app faster. To kind of wrap things up, we have a somewhat self-serving news item, but we're excited about it. Chain React workshops have been announced. So if you're coming to Chain React and you want to do a workshop, you can do that now. We have a beginner workshop, which is React Native Fundamentals. And then we have an intermediate workshop, which will feature Keith Kurak from Expo. And then we have an advanced workshop. Mazen, you're actually helping with the advanced workshop, if you want to talk a little bit more about what that's about.
Yeah, I'll go backwards. So I'm teaching the advanced workshop. Josh and John Major, colleagues here at Infinite Red, will be assisting me for that. We're basically going to talk about reading and writing native code for React Native developers. So understanding the different syntaxes of all the native languages needed. And we'll tie that all with a bow and, you know, build a native module using some of those native languages that we kind of discussed. That's the advanced. Intermediate, like Robin mentioned, Keith Kurak from Expo will be co-led with Frank Calise, who I'm sure you've never heard of, but he's also a colleague of ours here.
We never talk about him, and we've never had him on the show.
Ellie will be assisting them. Ellie's also a colleague here at Infinite Red. They're doing they're calling it good citizen, being a good mobile citizen. So building apps for multiple screen sizes, doing config plugins and widgets, you know, all that fun stuff that Expo's doing over there. So you kind of get to learn that. So if you want to stay in the Expo land, you have that perfect intermediate course. And then the beginner, React Native Essentials is what it's titled, will be led by JP, who I mentioned earlier, colleague here. And he'll be assisted by Nick and Felipe, again, colleagues here at Infinite Red.
Yeah, we've got, if you want to get information directly from the Infinite Red team, this is your chance.
Exactly. Yeah. Face-to-face value with us right there. And like I said, the beginner is just beginner. You're going to start learning how to style things, get all the way up to some complicated ish concepts in React Native, but you'll walk out with a functioning app on your phone or simulator. So you kind of get to show that off if you want. And if you don't know where you fit in this, check out the website. We put together Justin Husky over here at Infinite Red and I kind of work together on a flow if you're not sure which workshop to sign up for.
I just checked it out. It's really cool. It's like one of those, like the quizzes that you take on the...
Yeah.
Like, oh, what foundation is right for you? Or like
you could literally pick a workshop with as little as 2 clicks.
Nice.
I think the maximum flow is 4. So we kept it very short to the point.
It's not a 5-minute questionnaire.
We didn't want you to sit there and have to do a 5-minute quiz, you know? And I think another piece to highlight for Chain React that's not workshop related, but, you know, please submit CFPs if you're interested in speaking.
Yes.
The nice thing about this community and this conference is we get a lot of first-time speakers. And I can say from, you know, experience and just kind of being in the crowd and now working for Infinite Red, everyone is very friendly and nice. Even if it's your first time, you know, the crowd will pump you up, help you out and all that. And hey, you might also get to be speaking before or after Robin Hines. So you never know.
What? That's right. Yes. I will be speaking at Chain React this year about Ignite. So come join me on the stage and submit your CFP. We're really focusing on technical talks this year. And so we want your React Native focused talks. So submit that CFP. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And to wrap up my favorite little piece of news, this is really close to my heart. If you've ever used NASA's Spot the Station app, so if the space station like orbits the Earth like all the time and like it does this like weird orbit pattern where it's crossing over a different part of the Earth pretty much every day. And they have this app so you know where the station is at any given time if you want to like look up in the sky and find it. And their app is using not only React Native, but Ignite, which we were super heartwarmed to hear that. And we're actually going to have someone from NASA on the show,
an astronaut,
coming up soon to talk about it. So that was a fun
little bit
of news. So that's it for this episode. We really enjoyed going through all these fun developments in the React Native world. We will see you all next time.
Bye.
As always, thanks to our production team with editor Todd Wirth, our assistant editor and episode release coordinator, yours truly, Jed Bartoski, our director of marketing, Justin Husky, and our guest coordinator, Derek Greenberg. Our producer and host is Jamin Holmgren, and executive producers and hosts are Robin Hines and Mazen Chami. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out at infinite.red/React Native. A special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure to subscribe to React Native Radio wherever you get your podcasts.